During the Navi Yeshayahu, we're up to what they call the 19th chapter, the 4th Pasuk. The Navi had been describing the destruction of Mitzrayim. And so the Navi describes how they're going to have internal conflict. They will fight one another. The Egyptians will lose faith in their gods. And the Navi continues in Pasuk Daled. וסיכרתי את מצרים ביד אדונים קשה. The Navi says, I will give Mitzrayim over into the hands of a difficult, of a harsh ruler. ומלך אז ימשול בם נאום האדון אדוני צבאות. They will have a brazen king. They will be taken into powerful hands, says Hashem. Now the word visikarti is the equivalent of visigarti. Lesager is to enclose, to give over. So Hashem says, I will give over the Egyptians into a powerful king's hands. And this is the Assyrian Empire that will pounce on the Egyptian Empire. Ashur will take over Mitzrayim. Now here we have an interesting halachic discussion. What actually happened in Egypt? Why is it relevant to us? Let's say an Egyptian woman comes, an Egyptian man wants to convert. Are they allowed to marry into Israel or not? The Torah says that lo yavo mitzri bikal Hashem, right? An Egyptian cannot marry into Israel. They have to wait 3 generations, then they can marry into Israel.
They give the example, right? That from Dan in the Tanakh, in the Torah, he's the one that blasphemed because he didn't have a place to live. Remember, he was a Mitzri. His father was a Mitzri.
Benish Mitzri.
Yeah. So you say he can't.
Right.
But he did. Shouldn't he? Remember that?
I think that he was born prior to the Exodus from Egypt.
Right, that's probably true. Yeah, because it was right there and early on. Yeah. Okay.
So
it's a problem. It was right because it was from.
Because his father was a Mitzri, right? Right, right. Very good. So Rabbi Akiva had a student named Menimon Ger Mitzri. Menimon, an Egyptian convert. And Menimon said, I will marry a woman who's an Egyptian convert. I'll marry my son, second generation, etc. So that soon the descendants will be able to marry into Israel. And along came Rabbi Yoshua and said to him, no problem, you could marry into Israel. So he said, why? But I'm Egyptian. So Rabbi Yoshua said to him, he said, Kvarba Ashur, the Assyrian Empire already came. Sancheriv, the king of Ashur, came. Ubilbel es kol olam, and confused the whole world. That's it. No more Egyptians. We don't know who the Egyptians are. So the Navi over here doesn't actually say that the Egyptians will be exiled. He says they will be given into the hands of a powerful, ruthless king. We rule that Egypt is no longer Egypt. That the country might be the country, but the people are not the people. And the waters of their sea will dry out. They will be removed. Nishetu means they will be destroyed. The Nile will dry out. And so their land will cease to be fertile, and they will suffer from famine, from hunger. The rivers of Egypt will suddenly lack water. The deep irrigation ditches that they had made throughout their cities will suddenly be parched and dry. Kanevasuf kamelu. The different reeds that would customarily grow throughout Egypt, because they had the Nile filling all the different irrigation ditches. So all around Egypt, you would see reeds growing from the different irrigation ditches and streams that came from the Nile. They will all dry and wither. Kane vasuf kamelu. They will all dry and wither, be cut down. Arot al ye'or, al pi ye'or, v'chol mizra ye'or, yivash nidaf ve'einenu. The Navi says, arot. Now the word arot, the word arot, you'll encounter in Shas in different contexts, but the word really means something that pours into something else. So you can understand that this isn't the setting where I can elaborate too much, but you understand that the word arot has other meanings. So arot, al ye'or, al pi ye'or, the Navi describes how the different grasses that used to be on the edge of the Nile, arot al ye'or, the grasses that grew by the Nile, al pi ye'or, even by the very edge of the Nile, so they were very close to the Nile, they will dry out. V'chol mizra ye'or, and all the different seeds that people would plant around the Nile to get as close as they could to the water source, yivash nidaf ve'inenu, they will dry out and they'll pass from the world. So he's describing how from without God will send the Assyrian Empire to attack and destroy the Egyptians. From within, the Nile will dry up and the Egyptians will wear down in hunger. And in truth, he's describing a similar destruction to the destruction of Israel. Because if you recall, Israel suffered a similar plight, both in the destruction of the first and the second temple, where you had the enemy coming and attacking from without, and you had famine plaguing them from within. They had a shortage of food. Ve'anu hadayagim, the fishermen will weep. The word anu is not like anu. If it's pronounced mil-el, the beginning of the word, it has the stress, then it's anu, then it's us. If it's anu, it's milra, the stress is on the end of the word, so then it comes from the word aninut, to weep, to be in sorrow. One who loses a relative and has not yet buried that relative is called an onen. He is one who is in a state of sorrow. So that's different than an avel, one who's in a state of mourning. Anu means they will weep, they will be sorrowful. Hadayagim, the fishermen. Ve'avelo, and they will mourn. Kol mashlichei vayeochaka, all those who used to throw their traps into the Nile to catch fish, uforesei michmoret al penei mayim umlalu, and people who would throw their nets out on the waters will also be completely depressed because there'll be no water, there'll be no fish, so they'll lose that source of food as well. Now in Egypt, they had a lot of fish. The Nile was filled with fish. That's why the Jews said, "Zachanu tadagash anochal v'mitzrayim chinam." We remember the fish we used to eat for free in Egypt. It used to be so easy. You just go to the Nile, put in a bucket, and you could get a bunch of fish with your water. And now we're out here in the desert, and all we got is this man. So the Navi is describing that the food sources of Egypt will dry up, excuse the pun. Uvoshu. Oveday, Nahum's teaching me. Uvashu ovedei fishtim serikot, and those who made the flax, those who plant the flax by the edge of the river, they will be boshu, they will be embarrassed, they will be, their faces will be turned down as they have nothing to plant. Serikot, over here the sin and the samach are interchangeable. It means the flax, which is ordinarily saruk. Saruk means what in Hebrew? Combed. The flax, those who worked the flax that was combed will also be depressed. Ve'orgim chorai. And those who would weave the different embroidery or things that would be woven. And when you weave, so you have holes in the weaving, right? If you weave thick thread, so then there are bigger holes. So that's why it says, Origim chorai, those that weave with holes, they too will be embarrassed because they'll have nothing to weave. So he's describing how the whole economy comes to a standstill. Suddenly there's nothing to do. Every form of sustenance revolved around the Nile. So when the Nile dries up and from without they're being attacked, so their commerce is going to stop. And their internal economy is going to stop. Their raw material is going to stop. Their source of food is going to stop. So from every direction God's describing, there will be destruction. The foundations of the of Egypt will be depressed. All those who would erect dams in order to catch fish, they too will be weeping because they'll have nothing to do as well. And now the Navi tells us one of the worst parts of destruction. It's part of what everyone fears is going on right now in the world economy. And that is the leadership. Meaning there are many hardships that have to be weathered throughout life. Throughout a kingdom, there's going to be periods of hardships. There are going to be times when you have to contend. Sometimes it's an enemy from without. Sometimes it's an enemy from within. Sometimes it's difficult economic times. But if you have leadership, then you can deal. If you don't have leadership, so then it becomes catastrophic. And that's what the Navi says. Ach evilim sarei Tzoan. The leaders, the nobles of Tzoan, which was one of the capital cities of Egypt, they've all become fools. Yot chachme yotzei faro eitza nivara. The wise advisors of Pharaoh. Now they give him stupid advice. Eich tomeru el faro ben chachamim ani ben malchei kedem. How do you tell Pharaoh, I'm from a family of wise men, listen to me. So the Navi says, where are all your wise men? It's as though he's talking to Pharaoh. Where do they go now? Let them tell you now. Let them understand. Let's see them realize what God's planning for Egypt. That's always the fear. You know, when things go bad, so the tendency of man is to think it'll always go bad. And when things go good, the tendency of man is to think it'll always go good. So then you outsmart it, and you tell yourself, nah, this'll have to turn around one day. But there are times when it doesn't, when it becomes catastrophic. And the question is, how do you know when to pull out? How many people knew to leave Nazi Germany? How many people thought it's a passing storm? I have a friend who I learned Chavrusa with. So his wife, every time she's pregnant, she gives birth very fast. Their first boy was born, I think, in the sixth month. Spent months in the intensive care unit. So she was expecting, and she'd start having contractions, and she'd take all kinds of alternative medicines that helped her calm the contractions. So yesterday morning at 6 o'clock, she started having contractions again. So they tried to calm it down. And at 7 o'clock, when they started seeing feet, they realized this isn't calming down. So her husband gave birth. They called Mada. By the time Mada came, they were holding a brand new baby. Mada directed him on the phone how to deliver his wife. What?
How many months was it?
It was week 37. I had just finished week 37. So it's a safe period already. It's the ninth month. So they made it. Thank God. They made it.
Can feet first?
What?
Can feet first, though?
I'm not sure if I'm confusing that with another similar story that happened last week. I don't know. I don't remember. This happens to a lot of people. But at any rate, I'm just saying, so, you know, you try to calm the contractions. You try it. It's been working for the last 3 months, you know, and now, boom, by the time they realize, there's a baby in their hands. So that's, I'm just saying that as an allegory, it's a mashal, I'm saying, but that's the way it is in life. That there are many times where we like to assume it's cyclical. The cycle will repeat itself, and most of the time that's true. Most of the time. But there does come a time when things actually explode. The wise man realizes that. I always wonder how my grandfather knew to leave Germany. I'm alive because he left Germany. He saw what was coming. He took his whole family and ran. Now, you tell yourself, but there were pogroms throughout their history, and there was anti-Semitism came and went, and it was a part of life. How did he know to run? He was 19 years old. He picked up his family and ran. I don't know. To Israel.
You got to be very smart and very lucky. And help Hashem, because in Germany, unlike Russia, Poland, you know, where it happened overnight, people could see it get worse. But the problem was, who wanted a bunch of Jews? You couldn't take your money. The depression in the world, that's why the ones that ended up in China and Brazil or wherever. But most of the ones who got it from there, either they went to the wrong country, Germany, France, Belgium, that was reoccupied, or they were sitting there with a number, but it was too late. You know, they couldn't. So I think in that case, the people maybe, the ones who really could have vision in 33 or 34, he left in those times. Yeah, but by 35, 36, I think most people were on a wait list somewhere, from my understanding.
Yeah, no, he left in the beginning. I don't know.
He must have either been very Christian, you know, very, or, you know, sometimes, it's like with Aliyah. Hashem works in a way where things aren't working so well for me here. It's easier to leave when you don't have the good job and the good wife and the good. So it's hard to know.
There's also a reality, though, back in those days, you had like your Jabotinskys, your Herzls a little earlier. If you told European Jews about, you know, this, you were considered an extremist. You were considered a warmonger, like, oh, stop talking or else they're going to hate us now. So that's another thing worth mentioning. Not only were people not wanting to get out, people were told, oh, you're trying to warn us, you're an extremist, you're a radical.
Yeah, I'm just saying, but in life, most of the time the correct approach is, it's a cycle, it'll pass, it's a phase. Right. There are ups, there are downs. But there are those times when it's critical to realize it's not.
Mm-hmm. How do you know? Right now, stock market, 16,000 something, right? Gold dropped 30% last year.
Right.
Do you rebalance? Or do you say, I don't know, maybe another year, 2 years. Does the dollar itself go down the tubes? You know, so you're asking questions that are great questions. The question is, how do you know when it's not going to be like it was the last 70 years?
Right.
Nazi Germany had no precedent. I mean, the pogroms, yes, but to that extent? Now, we're also diamonds because of that. We see that happening where it probably doesn't. But, these are tough things.
I'm saying, that's what the Navi's yelling to the Egyptians. He's saying, you're so smart, do you realize what God's planning? Do you realize that it's over for Egypt? Where's all your wisdom now? The Navi says, No'alu sa'arei Tzoan. The nobles of Tzoan, again, that's one of the capital cities of Egypt, they are now completely foolish. Nisi'u sa'arei Nof. The leaders of Nof, again, that's another capital city of Egypt, they're distracted. Hit'u et Mitzrayim pinat shivateha. They're misguiding Egypt, and they are the capital, they are the cornerstone of its tribes, and the leaders of Egypt are misguiding it. Adonai masach bekirba ruach ivim. God poured within Egypt a spirit of confusion. And so even the advisors and even the nobles will misguide Mitzrayim in every step of the way. Just like a drunk keeps going back and slipping over his own vomit, so too the Egyptians will now stumble over their foolishness. The question here is there more to the allegory? Like we know the Rambam says, some allegories you have to analyze every word and understand the comparison, and some you say, it's a general thought. I'm not sure over here.
So what's the message? Is it's in God's hands, you do what you can with the information, or what? I mean, we had situations, right? With Bar Kokhba, with
It's like, what could have we done? What did we done? You know, in hindsight, we don't even know. So to know before the fact what would have been the wise choice seems, you know, it's going to blow over at some point. Why did Reagan look good with the technology boom and all that on his watch? Why did somebody else, let's say George Bush, look bad because, you know, the economy crumbled on his watch? Could have been, you know. So what's the message here? That we realize, you know, like Kohelis, you could do a lot worse than following the commandments and leave the rest to God. I mean, what's the message?
He's trying to, I'm not sure. I think the Navi is his main point is that the Egyptians were the cause of our destruction. The main reason they were the cause of our destruction was because we had a verbal agreement. We had a contract that if we were attacked, they would come. We relied on that contract, and ultimately that backfired. So Hashem is saying, okay, so it was... If the Egyptians would have just said, we're not coming, so then the Jews would have had the intelligence to give up, less people would have died, and the whole exile would have played itself out differently. And the promises the Egyptians made are what misguided us. So the Navi is saying, so to speak, an eye for an eye. When the time will come, Hashem is saying, I'll take care of the Egyptians, and by the same token, they'll be misguided. Their leaders will misguide them, because if Hashem decides to destroy, he will destroy. So on the simple level, the Navi is prophesizing the revenge, the payback to Egypt. But there's something deeper going on here too. V'lo yihye le'mitzrayim ma'aseh asher yaseh rosh v'zanav kippah v'agmon. God says they'll have nothing to do. Everything they do will backfire. There'll be nothing that they can do, be it the Rosh, the head, the leader, be it the Zanav, the tail, be it the Kippah, which can mean different commentaries translated differently, different types of leaderships. V'agmon is another type of noble. The different types of nobles will each try to figure something out, and nothing's going to work. Bayom ha'o yiye Mitzrayim ka'nashim. On that day, women will be like the Egyptians will be like women. V'charad ufachad mipnei tenufat Adonai tzevaot asher hu meinif alav. Just like when there's a war, the woman says, "Go out there and protect me." She's going to lift the sword. She's not as strong as the man wielding a sword. So by the same token, the Egyptians will be like women in that sense, that they won't have the strength. When Hashem comes waving his sword at them, they won't be able to stand up to it. And the pivotal point is the final pasuk we'll learn today, which brings us full circle. Vayeta admat Yehuda leMitzrayim leChagam. The land of Israel will be a source of fear to Egypt, because the Egyptians will hear how, after the Assyrian Empire plundered them, and as much as they tried and as much advice as they took, nothing worked. Everything backfired. Then the Assyrian Empire, Sanherib, the king of Ashur, takes all of their wealth with a tremendous force to this little city of Jerusalem. And he's standing there and he says, "I have more generals than you have soldiers. I have more horses than you have water to drink. My horses alone, if they would just walk down your streams, all of Israel will be dry." And there's no hope. What?
Is the Egyptians talking?
No. It's after the Ashur defeats Mitzrayim, after the Assyrian Empire conquers Egypt, and they take all their wealth, and Egypt is wiped. Then the Assyrian Empire goes back to destroy Jerusalem. And in one night, a miracle happens, and the whole Assyrian force is wiped out.
It's the plague.
The plague, right? God sends an angel, there's a plague, boom. So then the Egyptians look at it and say, "Hey, wait a second, what's going on here? When they came to attack us, we took all our counselors and our advisors and sorcerers and nobles and leaders and officers and all the people with all their experience, nothing worked. Then they go against the king who spends his day weeping and crying and praying and being pious, and he doesn't even have an army. You know, it's a little force. And suddenly, boom, they're destroyed. So that will cause the Egyptians to tremble. Kol asher yazkir ota elav yifchad. Anyone who mentions Judea in Egyptian territory, it'll bring about fear. Mipenei atzat Adonai tzevaot asher hu yoetz alav. That's when they'll have to face the fact that this is all God's plan, because they'll have no explanation. They'll say, how did Judea get out? And how come we were destroyed? Doesn't make sense. We were such a greater force, and Sanherib took us down, and Judea had nothing. That's when they'll have to face it, that no, Hashem says, it's my plan. Well, we'll pick up here. Bezat Hashem next week.